This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. April is National Donate Life Month, dedicated to raising awareness of the need for organ and tissue donors and to encourage more people to register as organ donors. One effort to show the positive impact of organ and tissue donations is the Transplant Games of America, where recipients and donors compete in athletic and recreational games. This year it's happening in Cleveland. And joining us to talk about her life after a double lung transplant and the upcoming transplant games is Tanya Gomez. And from Life Center Organ Donor Network here in Cincinnati, Public Affairs Director Andy O'Malley. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Tanya and Andy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Andy, tell us about National Donate Life Month and how it got its start.
Well, it started several years ago, and this was just something that nationally Donate Life America wanted to do to bring more awareness to the importance of organ, eye, and tissue donation and the critical shortage of organs that currently exists and the people, unfortunately, that die waiting for organ transplants, and also to celebrate those that have received the gift of life. So really just a high-impact month full of activities and awareness and just outreach to really motivate people who may have not made that decision to designate themselves as a donor to think about it and get the information and make a decision.
Well, how big is the current waiting list for transplants? What's the average wait time?
Well, right now we have over 123,000 people on that national wait list. And it really depends on what organ the patient is waiting for. For a kidney patient, for example, the wait averages out between somewhere between 2 to 4 years, again, just depending on the circumstances and medical issues with that patient. But with, for example, a lung patient, it could be a longer wait because lungs aren't always as available as we would say a kidney would be.
Well, how many people die each year because they just don't get the organ that they need in time? It's just not donated in time.
Well, I can tell you every day, 21 people in this country die. So, and that, you know, that number continues to increase. When I started at Life Center 10 years ago, it was about 17 or 18 people who died each day. So that in itself shows the critical need, and this truly is a healthcare crisis that has to be addressed, which is why National Donate Life Month is so important, because we really need to shine that light on organ and tissue donation and the need for more people to register.
Well, how many people benefit from a transplant each year?
In 2015, nationally, we saw a slight increase in the number of people. We hit almost the 30,000 number, which in the past we've never been able to achieve that. So 30,000 people benefited from the gift of donation in 2015. So I think that that shows that there's a movement and that people are understanding the impact that being an organ and tissue donor has. You know, to be an organ donor, it's a very rare opportunity. About 1% of the deaths that occur in a year are people who would be eligible to be organ donors because they have to have died a brain death, which is not something that happens very often. Tissue is something that I think more people have the opportunity to be because they don't have to be on a ventilator. It doesn't have to be a brain death. So there's more opportunity. And tissue is, you know, it's life-changing for so many people who are dealing with various medical issues to, you know, knee injuries, spinal injuries, eye challenges that cause them, you know, blindness and those types of things. Tissue helps those people, burn victims. I mean, so there's so many benefits to organ, eye, and tissue donation.
What's the impact of tissue donation? I think I read somewhere it's like one donation just it has a lot of reach.
Could help up to 50 people. And again, that's something people don't really know that. I think, you know, when we talk about donation, people gravitate towards organ. It's something that's more familiar. But with tissue, there's so many ways to help people through skin, bone, ligaments, tendons. It just, I mean, it is, you know, we have one of the best burn centers here in the country in the Shrine. And a lot of the skin that Life Center recovers goes to help those burn patients. So it really is an opportunity for someone to leave a legacy and to help someone else when they're no longer here.
Eye donations?
Help thousands. I mean, we just through different illnesses or, you know, conditions that people who have vision deficiencies are dealing with, cornea transplants are increasing, and they help thousands of people.
Mm-hmm. Tanya, let's get you into the conversation because you have a remarkable story as a double lung recipient. Now, tell us about why you needed a transplant.
Well, I was born with cystic fibrosis, which is a genetic lung disease. For most people, the lungs are the thing that is affected the most. It affects some other organs as well, but the lungs are primarily affected. And when I was born, I was very, very sick. My mother didn't know what was wrong with me. The doctors continuously diagnosed it as bronchitis. But you know your children and you know something's not right. So she finally took me up to Columbus. And she said the doctors took one look at me and knew right away that I had cystic fibrosis. And I was 9 months old at the time. So once they knew what was wrong with me, they were able to treat me. And I did very well. 2 years later, I had a brother that was also born with cystic fibrosis. And they knew right away that he had it. But unfortunately, his illness was much more severe than mine. And he passed away at the age of six. Mm. So that was really difficult. My mother was dealing with two young children who were very, very ill. And, you know, it took a toll. But throughout my life, probably until I was about in high school, I did really well. I think because, you know, my body started changing and, of course, I was growing up and getting older. I think I started responding more to different infections and getting colds and things like that. So as the disease progressed, I would get lung infections. I would end up in the hospital for several weeks at a time. And gradually my lung function declined because my lungs were getting scarred every time. So once they were scarred, I wasn't getting that lung function back. And the interesting thing about living with this illness is I think as time goes on, you begin to adapt to all of it. So as your lung function declines, you adapt to it and you just change everything that you're doing. So I did really, really well for the longest time. I was blessed with a child that I never thought I would have. And when he was about two, my lung function started getting to the point where I just couldn't keep up, having trouble getting to work every day, getting really tired. I was on oxygen at night at that time. And when I just happened to visit my CF doctors, they said, well, we think it's time. And I had been evaluated for lung transplant several times before that, and both times I was just too healthy. The doctor said, you're too healthy, you don't need it yet. And, of course, my mom said, well, you know, what happens if she gets too sick? What are you going to do? You know, is that window going to come and pass? So they decided to keep a closer eye on me, and I still did really well for a long time. But as I said, about 2 years after my son was born, I got to the point where I just couldn't keep up. I was on oxygen 24/7. It took all my energy to just take a shower. I'd get out of the shower and I'd have to take a nap. And, you know, kids are very smart. So my son was two. I think he knew something was wrong with mommy because he would lay in bed with me and watch TV or color or do something until I was ready to get up and make breakfast and get the day going. So I think he knew all of that was going on. When I went and I was listed December 18th of 2003. And at the time, they told me, you're probably going to have to wait 2 years because you're so petite. You're probably going to need child's lungs. And they just don't come around every day. So I was prepared for a two-year wait. I would get on the internet and follow stories of other people that were waiting for transplants. Some people would make it, some people wouldn't, and I think that took a lot of stress out on my body. So finally my husband said, you have to get off the internet, you have to stop worrying about what's going to happen to you, you need to focus on taking care of yourself. And so I tried to do that, and, you know, you're always wondering what's going to happen, when's it going to happen, is it going to happen. My lung function got down to 19%. Like I said, I was on oxygen 24/7.
That's serious, yes. Yes.
Yes, it is. It is. And I know there are some people whose lung function might have been even lower at the time, but, you know, that was pretty serious for me and the way that my body could handle it. And we'd be sitting in church, and all we're doing is sitting in church, and I'd fall asleep because I just didn't have the energy and I didn't have the strength. And so it made it really challenging. But because they told me I was going to have to wait 2 years, you know, they tell you, have a bag packed, be ready. Well, I didn't because I figured I had 2 years to pack a bag. 5 months and 1 week later, I got the call. It was right before Memorial Day weekend, and I remember the weekend before I got my call, we were at a family event, and I told everyone, because at the time, I didn't have a pager or anything. They just called you on the phone, and I said, you know, I'm not going anywhere next weekend because, you know, I'm thinking about me at the time, and, you know, accidents happen and things like that. So I didn't plan on going anywhere that weekend in case I got the call. And lo and behold, I got the call the Tuesday before. It was a Tuesday morning about 10 a.m., just getting out of bed, getting my son his breakfast. And I got the call, and they said, you know, we think we might have lungs available if you want them. And, you know, living with this illness all my life, I knew what I was in for. I knew what I was dealing with. I knew that the only way I was ever going to survive any longer was if I got a lung transplant. So,
and you only waited 5 months.
5 months, yes. And so, you know, I think I was in a lot of shock, but at the same time, I would have been a fool for saying no, because I knew that opportunity might not come along. I think I was just still in shock. I don't think everything set in, all the events and details of everything. But we got there. The lungs were good. I got my transplant. And let me tell you, I did not realize how sick I truly was until I came out of that surgery.
You sound like you're doing great now, Tanya. I mean, what is life like for you now?
Life is great. I mean, sure, you know, we can always complain about the little things, but I wake up every day, and my son was 2 when I had my transplant, and he is 14 now. And I have been given almost 12 extra years with that boy and the rest of my family, and I would not have been able to see him do all the amazing things that he's doing. I would not have been able to see him grow into such an amazing young man. And I am so thankful for my donor and his family for that every single day. And I honor him every day. And I work hard to increase awareness for organ eye and tissue donation. I am so sorry.
Oh, that's okay. We're trying not to cry ourselves over here.
I can say just in the time that I've known Tanya, she honors her donor every day. She does not stop. I mean, she is out in the community in Dayton and Toledo, you know, sharing her story. She has just been in the development of the transplant games coming to Cleveland in June. She's just been a beast out there recruiting to get members, you know, to join Team Ohio. I mean, she really is an inspiration. And, you know, we appreciate everything that she's done. And just being her Facebook friend and seeing what she does on a daily basis, it's everything from, you know, watching her son's wrestling matches to being, you know, down in Cincinnati the next weekend visiting. I mean, she just goes and goes and goes.
It's amazing, Tanya, what you can do when you can breathe, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I think I knew that I was getting sick before the transplant, and I was probably in denial because I was living my life, a life that I never even knew if I was going to have growing up with cystic fibrosis. I mean, I was working a full-time job. I was raising a little boy, and I was living a life. And even though I couldn't breathe as well and I was getting more tired, I was still doing everything I could. And, you know, after the transplant, I went through recovery. I had more energy than I knew what to do with. And I couldn't believe how much air I could take into my lungs. I remember because I had my transplant May 25th of 2004. And so, you know, it was warm weather and it was summer. And we had gotten our son one of those little blow-up pools. And instead of using the air compressor, I started blowing that thing up myself. And my husband came home from work and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, I'm doing it because I can. Mm-hmm. I'll do it until I pass out. Because I can do this. Before my transplant, I couldn't even hold my breath for 2 seconds. And I did it because I could. And, you know, I have grown ever since then, and I have worked so hard to make sure that I take care of myself and I take care of the lungs, the gift that I've been given. And when I go to the doctors, do I still catch colds and things like that? Sure. I worked as a dietitian prior to transplant, and I'm working full time as a dietitian now. When I went back to work, I went back in clinical, so I was around patients. I just was careful. You know, if a patient had pneumonia, I didn't go to their room. But for the last 2 years, I've just been doing corporate and community health promotion as a dietitian, and so I'm not around that as much, but I'm out there, I'm working, and I'm enjoying my life, and I'm doing everything that I can to raise awareness. There are people at the hospital I work at, you know, when I talk to them and I share my story and we do a flag-raising ceremony here for Donate Life Month, I'm finding all different kinds of people. People who have had transplants that don't say anything. There's a couple living donors that work in the hospital. And one of them I would have never even known had I not just happened to have, you know, need a particular test done. And so there's so many people out there that you can meet and you can touch their lives and they touch your lives. And it has just been amazing. I remember my one coworker had told me probably 3 years later, a couple years after I went back to work, she said, you know, I never wanted to tell you before because I didn't want to upset you, but I remember the last time I talked to you before your transplant, I was so worried about you because I knew in my heart that if you didn't get that transplant, I didn't think you were going to be around much longer. So she never wanted to tell me that before, but I remember when I got the call, and we were on our way to Cleveland, and we were making all the phone calls, and she was in the middle of teaching a class, and she got a page. And she said she just had a feeling that it was me because nobody ever calls her during the day at work and especially during a class. So she got that feeling that it was me calling her to let her know.
Tanya, how long did the surgery take and how long did the recovery process take?
Well, I have to say, you know, aside from feeling like I got hit by a Mack truck after I woke up and pain meds started wearing off, I went in, I got to Cleveland at about 1 o'clock, and they said, you know, we have to make sure everything's good. They prepped me for surgery. I didn't even realize what was happening, you know. I'd been admitted to the hospital so many times in my life that every time that happened, I'd go to the admitting desk. I would show them my insurance card. They'd have me sign papers. They admit me. They send me up to my room. So I just figured that's what I'm going to do. You know, they're going to take me to an admitting room. They're going to ask me for all this information. No. When I got there, they took my name. They took me back to the ICU. They took my oxygen. They gave me hospital oxygen. They put me in a gown. They started putting IVs in me. And then it hit me. I'm like, what? What is going on here? And they said, well, we're prepping you for surgery because we don't know if the lungs are good yet. But if they are, we're ready to go. And I was like, oh, my gosh, this is real. This is really happening. And so it was about 5:30 that they told me that the lungs were good and it was a go. And they took me back to OR about 7:30. The doctors had called my husband about 9:30 to let him know what was going on. And I want to say it was about 11:30 they called him again to let him know. And then I think he told me it was about between 11:30 and 1:30 they called. And it was the surgeon. He said, I'm all done. And there's another surgeon that is closing her up. So it was between 4 and 6 hours. My recovery, you know, of course, I was very much medicated, and I don't remember a whole lot. But my husband had left the next day to take our son home and my sister-in-law. And when he came back, I was off the ventilator. So I was off the ventilator in less than 24 hours.
And quite a contrast now, Tanya, because now you're taking part in the Transplant Games of America, which is an athletic and recreational game competition. So did you ever in your life think you'd be doing something like this?
Oh, no. You know, CF patients nowadays, medicine's come a long way. And so there are a lot of CF patients who, you know, they're runners and they're doing a lot of things because they, you know, they know that this exercise is keeping their lungs strong and their lung function as good as it can be if that would ever rise where they would need a transplant. But back when I was growing up, I mean, the life expectancy was 14. So, I mean, I was very conservative. I didn't want a lot of people to know what was wrong with me because I didn't want them to treat me different. I didn't want them picking on me. It still happened, unfortunately, but I had a very close knit of friends that knew what was wrong with me, and that was it. And so, I mean, I didn't participate in a lot of things. I twirled baton. That was about it. So I was not a runner. I didn't play tennis. I didn't swim. I liked to swim, but I was not a competition swimmer, anything like that. And so when I had my transplant, they had a hospitality unit at Cleveland Clinic right in the hospital, and that's where I went. I was in the hospital for about a week and a half, and then I went to the hospitality unit, and I was there for about 2.5 weeks. My entire stay at Cleveland was about a month. But I remember when we were in the hospitality unit, there was a flyer hanging about the transplant games. And it was that summer because they're in even years, and I knew I couldn't go because you have to have a functioning transplant for 9 months. And so I just looked at it and said, I want to do that. I have no idea what I'm going to do, but I want to do that. So I was researching and doing a lot of things for 2006, and I knew, you know, I was not an athlete, but I knew that I wanted to do it because I could do it. And that's what inspired me to start participating in the games. Nobody really, you know, said to me, hey, have you ever heard about the transplant games? Hey, this is something you should do. It was something I saw and I decided I wanted to do. And I was hooked from then on. And all I do is I let people know about the games, how much fun it is, how inspiring it is, and the fact that you can go to it because you can, because you're alive to go. It's not about competing to win medals. It's a bonus, for sure, but it's about doing these things because you're alive and because you can do them.
Well, what's the mission of the games?
It's really just to, you know, create this place where, as in Tanya, I don't think she could have said it any better, but, yeah. You know, to create Absolutely. This place where recipients can come together with donor families and celebrate the gift of life and the ability to compete. You know, so many of transplant patients have not been able to do that in their lives. And so just to see that passion and willingness to just go out there and compete and have fun. And again, what a wonderful way to honor the gifts that they've received from their donors. So that's really the mission of the games.
Mm-hmm. Who can participate in the games, Tanya?
Well, if you are a transplant recipient, you can be a bone marrow recipient, you can be a cornea or tissue recipient, an organ transplant recipient, and it is also open to living donors. So living donors can participate in a handful of events as well. But that is just for competition. And what they've done over years is they have added things that are considered not as competitive, like they've added poker and trivia and darts and cornhole, because, you know, as Andy said, you know, the mission of the games is to increase awareness for organ, eye, and tissue donation and increase the registry to get more people on the donor registry list. But they also want people to see that you don't have to be an athlete to participate in the games. There are a lot of things, and just being there, because there are so many things for the donor families to do. There's a donor tribute ceremony that is just the most amazing thing. It is an emotional event in a good way, but it's honoring all of those donors that have given the gift of life, including the living donors. And it's just something that, you know, the donor families can take part in as well. And, you know, some people will say, well, you know, I'm not a donor family, I'm not a living donor, and I'm not a recipient. What can I do? Well, if my husband was here, he would tell you. You know, it's just being there with all of the recipients and the living donors and the donor families and all the supporters and how much that this cause is near and dear to their heart. You meet so many people. We're not just going to be Team Ohio knowing other people from the state of Ohio. We're going to be people meeting people from Wisconsin and New York and California. I mean, you meet friends for life because they're all in the same situation. They get it. They know what you've been through. So it's just, I mean, it is a great event. So even if you don't compete it for medals or you're just not sure, I mean, it's a great event just to experience and see how excited people get and how you can meet so many people and hear their stories. And that is participation alone. And my husband would agree because he's been a supporter of mine for years and he loves it. I mean, he will always go. And, you know, the 1 year in 2010 in Madison, he actually got to participate with me because we did an exhibition for ballroom dancing. So he got to participate with me, which was really nice. That is one of the events that they offer. So for anyone who's had a transplant, they're the person that gets judged, but that is a great way for your spouse or, you know, a family member to participate with you in the games. It's just one option. So, I mean, it really is a great event all around.
Tell me some more about Team Ohio, Tonya. How many people on it? What's your specific role with Team Ohio?
I am one of the Team Ohio co-managers. I basically take care of the Northwest Ohio area. But because I've been involved with the games for so many years, you know, I know people from all of the different areas, and I know a lot of the stories. And right now, We've always had great participation. We've always had to travel to different areas because it's in a different city every 2 years. But with it being in our home state, we expect to have the largest team that we've ever had. And right now, registration is still going on, but we have over 380 team members total. And a huge portion of those, I mean, it's kind of even. A lot of those are comprised of donor families and supporters and recipients and living donors. So our team is just growing. And to me, it's not really about the numbers. It's about how many people can we get to the transplant games to experience this event that all of us have been fortunate enough to experience in the past. Because I always tell people, you know, if you don't go, you don't know what you're missing. But at the same time, if you say you go to opening ceremonies and that's it, you're going to say, I wish I was staying for the whole thing, because it's just that cool, you know, for lack of some other words. I mean, it's just that cool. And you see the camaraderie, you see how everybody is family. I mean, you may not even know the person, but you know that they've been through the same thing as you. Or, you know, they've lost a loved one and you're there and you can say thank you to them for being there and doing that. So, I mean, everybody's there. And even though you may not know somebody, they automatically become family. So, and Team Ohio is like that. Team Ohio has been like that for a long time. And, you know, every time we sign somebody up for Team Ohio, I always tell them, welcome to the family, because that's what we are. We're a family. And, you know, we do a lot of things. I mean, we do fundraisers. We get together. You know, a lot of the people from my team are my really good friends. We go out to lunch. We go out to dinner. We hang out other times, not just at Team Ohio functions or not just at the games. But, you know, we're there for each other because we know what it's like.
It really is an awesome event. And Life Center and the other Ohio OPOs are proud supporters of the event, of the games, as well as transplant centers in the state of Ohio. I would just encourage people to visit teamohio.org if they want to get more information on how to register for Team Ohio. And if you want more info about the games, go to TransplantGamesOfAmerica.org.
And we also have that on our website, a link to that at WVXU.org as well. Tonya, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon and sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Tonya.
Tonya Gomez, team captain for the Dayton-Toledo region of Team Ohio for this summer's Transplant Games of America, and from Life Center Organ Donor Network in Cincinnati, Public Affairs Director Andy O'Malley. Andy's also going to be joining us for the next part of the show as we continue our conversation about organ donation. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.